This is Viewpoint with attorney and author Chuck Crismeyer. Viewpoint is a one-hour talk show confronting the issues
Sam
of
America's
heart and home.
Yes, it's
and
okay.
Now with today's
you're on Viewpoint,
Viewpoint here is
live. Stay tuned. Welcome to Viewpoint. I'm Chuck Crismeyer. It's conversation with ever-increasing conviction, talk that transforms, and we have been able to finally connect with our guest here today on Viewpoint, and I'm glad that you've joined us. It's conversation with ever-increasing conviction, talk that transforms, and our guest today is going to sit across the kitchen table with us to talk about a subject that is almost taboo in many circles. You and I have experienced, or at least we have heard so much concerning the latest Olympic adventures. Well, we could call them Olympic adventures. It began with the opening ceremony at the Olympics, and many of the people have been sorely distressed by what they experienced there. What was it they experienced? Well, they experienced a mixture of homosexual, transgender expressions in total glaring reality to replace the Last Supper of Jesus and his disciples. It was as if it were a global slap in the face to Christians. That's what happened. And then we also experienced the repercussions or continuing repercussions of the boxing debacles where women who were men who are supposed to be acting as women but not necessarily women have boxed with one another, and we find that a woman or a man that wants to be a woman, a wannabe woman, is not the same as a woman by birth. In fact, there's a crushing difference. Crushing with extreme power, with uncompromising assault, you might say, because of the hormones or whatever it is that's driving the male who wants to pretend to be a female. But what happens if such a person is your child? What happens if such a person comes to you right up front and says, you know what, we got a problem here because I'm not really who you think I am. I really believe that I'm a queer non-binary, or that this body is not who I am. Maybe it's a friend that has confessed to your teen that he or she is trans, and your child is asking you how to respond. And you wonder, well, how can I respond to this? Or maybe it was an uncle that has begun estrogen treatments and is asking your family to use a new name for him. Or how do you advise your child on engaging with him? Or is it her, actually? And how do you raise your young person in the midst of the now prevalent trend in the culture to become trans? Or maybe you've seen some clothing in a drawer that stopped you in your tracks. Or you're putting two and two together and realizing the child you thought you knew is leading a double life. What do you do as a parent? What do you do as a pastor? Well, today on Viewpoint, Sam Andrades is joining us with his conversational book Across the Kitchen Table to talk about trans with your teen. Sam, it's good to have you on the program.
Thanks, Chuck. It's really great to be here.
All right. Well, this is quite the challenge, and of course we're seeing all of this played out in high drama, Technicolor or high definition across the world, and it's baffling to many of us. We just don't quite understand the dynamics of what is taking place. How is it that you understand it?
Well, I've been helping people with gender issues for a long time. I started out my pastorate in Greenwich Village in New York City 20 years ago, and gender issues were front and center there.
Well, I guess so. Greenwich Village in New York City, I guess so, brother.
That's right. That's right. People came there to explore a lot of different things, and gender was one of them. So I've just had a lot of time and study walking with people who really do struggle with their bodies and struggle with the issues of gender, and that's just the experience that I've had.
Well, you say in your book that this isn't actually a totally new thing, that it goes back in history, antiquity actually. But I wonder, if you go back to Greenwich Village back in the mid to late 1960s, it was a just like in Haight-Ashbury in San Francisco, it was the, shall we say, the root of the free love movement that came out of the rebellion against God, the free love movement, the sexual revolution. I wonder to what extent this trans issue and the homosexual issue is just not a progressive outcome of the free love movement. What say you?
Well, I'd say there were threads of it there, because part of that movement had to do with trying to break down gender in relationship. And one of the principles that I bring out from the Bible is that gender always matters in relationship. Gender is about relationship. So in that movement, earlier decades where people were taking gender out of relationships, it doesn't matter what men and women do, how they love each other differently. Like, that was not, they wanted to flatten everything, so there was no difference. That started to snowball into what we have now, where people say, well, if there's no difference in gender in relationship, what difference does it matter to have a man and a woman? And then from there, people start asking, well, am I a man or am I a woman? What makes me a man or woman? So all this confusion does have very early roots. You're right.
Well, and then you talk about how it goes back even further than that. For instance, yeah, if you go back in the Bible, the Israelites were told by God that a woman should not wear a man's garment, nor shall a man put on a woman's cloak. And it seems that the motivation to change the operational nature of one's gender or sex was present there back in the days when Israel came out of Egypt.
Oh, yes, even before that, the scripture you brought up from Deuteronomy is a good one, because if the command is there, you have to ask, why is the command there? There mm-hmm. must be the surrounding culture that is engaging in this kind of behavior. So if you look back, though, even before the time of Moses, or the time of the writing of the earliest scriptures, I go in the book back to the third millennium B.C., to the worship of Inanna, and the high priestess there, how she was, you know, you could appeal to this goddess to change your gender if that was something that was really in your heart to do. And so this was a feature of paganism. It's been there all along.
It's quite amazing. We don't think about things like that. It all seems so shocking. And the question is, what do we do about it? How do we understand? How do we respond? And how about parents? How about pastors? How about any of us? How do we respond to this? Do we just wrap our arms of love around and accept it as it's presented? Or is there another approach? We'll be right back, friends. Stay tuned.
Once upon a time, children could pray and read their Bibles in school. Divorces were practically unknown, as was child abuse. In our once great America, virginity and chastity were popular virtues, and homosexuality was an abomination. So what happened in just one generation? Hi, I'm Chuck Crismeyer, and I urge you to join me daily on Viewpoint, where we discuss the most challenging issues touching our hearts and homes. Could America's moral slide relate to the Fourth Commandment?
Listen to Viewpoint on this radio station or anytime at saveus.org.
Today we're looking at the whole issue, particularly of what is called sexual dysphoria, related to our bodies and whether or not we really are either male or female. In the book of Genesis, we find in Genesis chapter 1 and 2, we find God saying, in the beginning, God created not only heaven and earth, but he created mankind, humankind, in his image. Male and female created he them. Now, we find no instance where he created a half-breed of part male and part female. He created male and female. So, from the very beginning, it seems that God, the creator of heaven and earth, understood very well what he was about, what he was doing. So then the question comes, well, is it possible that God created then a person in a male gendered body who actually is female by nature, or really female in spirit? The opposite would be true then. Somebody who had a female body by creation would be a male by spirit and by operation. So, in fact, they're not really who they appear to be. Things aren't what they appear to be. Now, that's the idea in simple terms of this matter of gender euphoria. You might hear the term non-binary or trans man, or gender nonconformity, or gender crossing, or gender challenging, and gender destruction. Those terms were not part of the pagan world, but the reality of these things were part of the pagan world. Is that what you're saying, Sam?
Yes, it's true. We as a Christian and as a pastor have to look at the situation that people are in and say there's something that's gone terribly wrong. Because people are not able to embrace the way that God has created them. And a large part of it, Chuck, is that people have lost the vision for their gender. It's a glorious, glorious thing to be a woman, but women don't feel that. It's a wonderful thing to be a man, but men feel guilty about being men. And that's because of the cultural engines that have joined together to destroy kind of any positive view of gender, or try to recreate it in a way that's harmful for people.
Isn't that interesting? There's been an intentionality to make men uncomfortable with being men, to make women uncomfortable with being women, so that they need to be more like men. And so the women need to dominate, the men need to submit. It's all 100% opposite as defined in the scripture, isn't it?
Yeah, it does. It is, and it messes up relationships. That's why what you have now is, for the first time in history, the number of households in the United States based on a marriage has gone below 50%, according to census data.
Yeah.
So people are not able to get together because they don't know how to do a relationship. It's all tied up with gender.
Wouldn't it be true and honest to say that actually the whole issue of homosexuality is the earlier expression in our culture of gender dysphoria?
Yes, I would say that. I think that's the kind of progression that people are on. You start to minimize gender in relationship, and then people start to say, well, then you don't really need an intergendered relationship. You can have a monogendered relationship, which is gayness.
Well, it's interesting because I just recently heard a gentleman who seems to have a great deal of wisdom and understanding in the news, but is a practicing homosexual and proud of it, and is married to another man. And he takes issue, in fact, almost mocks and said, I just don't get it how these people, trans people, can claim any reality to what they're doing. And yet he himself is doing the same thing as a practicing homosexual. But it's become normalized.
That's right. It has become normalized. So it's the next thing. And what's sad is that the upcoming generation is also receiving the new kind of deviation as normal as well. So If you look at statistics in the Gen Z population now in America, it's 1 in 5 of Gen Z Americans will identify as some letter of LGBT plus, et cetera.
Mm-hmm.
1 in 5.
It's amazing, and one wonders, why is this happening? What is moving upon them to do this? And I think in your book, you at least help us to understand a little bit about this. When you talk about the boxes that our teens might be in, or young adults, what they might be in. So the first one of these boxes is a craving to fit in. A craving to fit in. Now, psychologists say, and I think they're right, that there are two great things that drive every human being, the desire to be accepted and the desire to be loved. They want to be fit in. They want to be accepted. In fact,
right,
in younger ones, they want to feel cool. They want to be feel like they're part of the great movement of history and what it means to really be on the cutting edge of things. Is that one of the major drawing cards, you think, for teens to fall into so-called dysphoria?
Yes, Chuck, that's exactly right. We all desire to be accepted by our peers, but for teenagers, the desire is visceral. And
in other words, it's on steroids.
Yeah, that's right. And it's a very vulnerable time of life because what one's friends think loom very large for teens. And life might feel lonely. And so you have this phenomenon now that's called rapid onset gender dysphoria, which is really, I don't think is a gender dysphoria. It isn't where people are really have an alienation from their bodies. It's just that it's cool to go trans, and our teen might not want to miss out.
So it's kind of what I might call wannabeism. I want to be like these friends or these others. I want to feel like I can really stand out, and this is how I can really stand out now.
Yes, that's right. And the internet kind of multiplies this. It's a kind of force multiplier for this, and that's why it really does help for teens to be able to detox from social media, to renew their relationship with their parents, can really address people who are in this box, so to speak.
Yeah. And then you have one called lurking comorbidity. What really is that?
Yeah, so I begin the book, as you're making reference to, with a flow chart to help people understand what's going on, the conversation they're having, because trans is a big umbrella of a term. It can mean different things when people say it now, different conditions or experiences. And so I do provide parents that were just loved ones. It doesn't have to be a parent, but who's ever got someone in their life like this. I give them a flow chart for understanding who they, you know, what the discussion might be about. And one of the other boxes is if it really isn't just a desire to be cool, very often what you have in people who are honestly upset with their and uncomfortable in their skin, uncomfortable with their gender, it's more serious problems are there, possibly a mental health or personality disorder, and it's not being diagnosed because it's hiding under the cross-gender desire, and people are just automatically diagnosed as, oh, gender dysphoria.
Yeah.
But people who work in a field know there's a definite connection a lot of times between autism or depression or anxiety disorders. They're common co-occurring concerns, we call them.
Well, it's like the doctor who you go in and you're describing some symptoms and so on, and his default position is to say, well, it's just stress. That's the common default for doctors. It's just stress. Well, it's not just stress. There's something else going on, but the doctor doesn't know how to deal with it, so he puts a comforting global label on it called stress. And this is kind of what you're saying here, that to call something gender dysphoria is kind of like the default position. There may be a lot of other things going on in the person's life that are far deeper and driving whatever the situation is.
Right. There are many stories in the book of people in different situations, and I talk about one guy, we call him Tim. He was a skinny guy, always way out there, according to his friends. And when trans got popular, he thought that this was the answer for sure to his trouble. So he adopted the persona of Anne, quote unquote. He took female hormones for a year. But he was also a very honest person, and that led to some thoughtful self-reflection on Tim's part. And he continued to be unstable. He realized this was not helping his condition at all. And he realized that his real problem was being masked by all this trans stuff.
Well, you say that another possibility is that the person may have experienced earlier trauma in their life that they interpreted as related to their sex or their gender. How does that fit?
Well, that's when we're getting into real, what I would say, real body alienation, true body alienation. And if you're a person in your life, or maybe even you, really do experience a singular and intense body distress, it's most likely due to earlier trauma in life. And this is the way that Great Britain is going. You might know, although Europe has sort of changed course on trying to care for folks in this condition, America kind of soldiers on. But Europeans have found that the way of going trans hasn't really helped people. So they're looking at a different model. And two of the psychologists who really turned the ship there, they say this is the model that a person who's really feeling these things are trying to defend against psychological traumas from their past. And it makes sense, right? If hatred of one's body is going to arise from some experience that fuels that self-loathing.
Either that or the experience of looking in the mirror. From the spiritual standpoint, those who do not want to yield to the move of the Holy Spirit and the Word of God become, shall we say, spiritual transsexuals or transgendered. The brother of Jesus, James, says, whoever looks into the perfect law of liberty, the Bible, and turns around and doesn't remember and agree with what he sees is going to be a deceived man or woman. And unfortunately, when we reject who we really are in favor of something else because we don't like who we are in our particular gender, it's amazing how twisted things can become in our own mind and in our own thinking. And as the scripture says, as a man thinks in his heart, so is he.
Yes. I'm glad you bring that up because I go into in the book, it's not just psychology or statistics.
Mm-hmm.
I bring out the spiritual dimension. There's always a spiritual driver in any of these cases. And we can go back and understand from the scriptures where our shame about our bodies comes from and how that God has an answer for those things.
Well, Adam and Eve had that experience right there in the garden, didn't they?
They sure did.
They ate of the tree of the knowledge of good and evil, and all of a sudden they realized they were naked and they were both ashamed.
That's where it comes from.
There it is.
Where all of our body shame comes from.
All the way back. All right, activism, that's another one. You just want to feel like you're part of making the world better. You're going to correct the world, and you're going to become like those that are claiming to dysphoric because that's the happening thing, and that's how you're going to change the world. Talk to us about that when we get back for the break. Our special guest today, Sam Andrades, with his book, Across the Table, talking about trans with your teen. $20 will put this very, very helpful and insightful book in your hands. It's on our website, saveus.org. Call us at 1-800-SAVE-USA or write to us at $5 for postage and handling. We'll be right back with Sam in a moment.
There is so much more about Chuck Chrismeyer and Save America Ministries on our website, saveus.org. For example, under the marriage section, God has marriage on his mind. Chuck has some great resources to strengthen your marriage. First off, a fact sheet on the state of the marital union, a fact sheet on the state of ministry, marriage, and morals. SaveUS.org. Marriage, divorce, and remarriage. What does the Bible really teach about this? Find all of this at SaveUS.org. Also, a letter to pastors, the Hosea Project, saveus.org, and many more resources to strengthen your marriage. It's all on Chuck's website, saveus.org. Again, you can listen to Chuck's Viewpoint broadcast live and archived. Save America Ministries website at saveus.org.
One of the most amazing cases that I ever handled in 20 years of law practice in Southern California was a case that I want to share with you right now, because it goes along with box number E that our guest has set forth in his book, Across the Kitchen Table, Adult Cross-Dressing. Adult Cross-Dressing. Both of the parties that were involved in this family law case were professing Christians, both of them. The woman came to me in my law office and was just totally distressed. They had been married for 15 years. 15 years, my friends, and had never consummated the marriage. You would think that would have been the first sign right up front. But she was very patient, and she believed that marriage was intended to be for life, marriage, and so she was patient. Her husband was a very nice guy. There wasn't anything mean or ugly about him. He was just a very nice guy. So what was the problem? She saw him go into the bathroom many times and stay there for long periods of time. Long periods of time. What was going on there? One day, in order to shorten the story, she was walking down the street and encountered him. Him, because he was dressed in women's clothes. So she brought the situation to me and she says, I don't know what to do about this. Is this a case for legal separation? Is this a case for divorce? Or what is this? Were we ever married? Well, in the law in California, and I think almost anywhere, there are exceptions to what constitutes, shall we say, not just a divorce or a legal separation, but a declaration that the marriage was not true, was not real from the get-go. And one of those is fraud. Right up front. Fraud. Right up front. So here was the situation. I brought the man into my office, and he admitted that he had been cross-dressing all of these years, that he had never consummated the marriage, that he just didn't feel married, that he had admitted all of these things, the very foundation of the law that says such a thing is clear grounds for declaring the marriage null and void, ab initio, or from the beginning. He actually signed a document admitting all of those things. The case never went to court. They didn't want this kind of thing to get out and go to court. And so it was resolved, not with a divorce. But the most unusual thing, after 15 years, that there never was a true marriage from the beginning. Adult cross-dressing. Pretty astounding, isn't it, Sam?
Well, you know, that's quite a story that you're telling. I, I'm actually not surprised that that's been that's in your background. It's something you've encountered because it's most of the reason. This doesn't come out in the media, but they don't let it come out. But most of the reason that men, adult men, cross-dress is for this reason. Sometimes they do it in secret, sometimes not, but they are doing it because it's for sexual arousal.
Are you sure that that's the only reason? Are you sure that it's not just also a desire to be a woman, a desire to be a woman, that they feel like a woman?
Yeah, but why? What is it that happens as they are dressing as a woman?
Well, we don't know necessarily. I mean, you're surmising that it's because they want to have some sexual activation, arousal, but maybe it's not just that. Maybe it's actually they are cross-dressing as an earlier form of dysphoria.
Well, I'm sure there could be cases like that. I'm just saying that the majority reason why men, adult men, cross-dress is for sexual arousal.
The
technical term is autogynephilia.
Oh, I could hardly wait to hear that term.
Yeah,
that's another version of lawyer big talk. I don't.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah,
well,
it's a big term, but it's just describing a phenomenon that is happening. It's an exclusively male group. It's not brought up in polite conversation, but it's big.
Well, hopefully we're having polite conversation here, and I just brought it up. And that was involved with two professing Christians who really believed that they were following the Lord. They were professing Christians, but that was what was happening for 15 years.
That's so sad.
Never a case like that, I think, in history. I don't know. I just can't imagine it. 15 years. Anyway, we're talking about how to talk then with your teen or young people about the whole situation of trans. We've been laying out some of the aspects of how one is drawn into this and comes to the belief that they are transgendered or homosexual or whatever it happens to be, changed in their gender, in their application of their gender. So what is a parent supposed to do? I mean, the whole thing is so confused and so traumatic. And so the parent in the current culture is prone to say, well, I just love my child, so I'm going to embrace the child for what they claim to be. I'm going to accept their determination as truth that they are a male that's really a female or a female that's really a male, and I'm not going to go beyond that. I'm just going to accept it for what it is. Is that what you're encouraging people to do?
Well, that's you got the first step. The first step about embracing your child. And what I do in my flowchart is say, you know, when you are first responding, when you first hear this news, your first response is very important. And it's very important to affirm your love for your child, because it's a very vulnerable moment if your child is talking to you about this, if it's coming out.
Right.
You need to make sure they know that that you love them, that they'll always be your child. That's just crucial, because that will determine kind of what happens next and whether you can walk together through this.
All right, I would agree with that, but what actually happens, I think, the majority of the time, is that the parent, even Christian parents, then are prone to say, okay, this must be true, this must be real, because my child is feeling it, so they're converted to embrace transgenderism.
Well, yeah, as I would say, it's only half of the equation, because Ephesians says that we come to maturity through the truth spoken in love. So we proceed in truth and love.
Right.
So truth without love, if you think about it, is not very truthful. And at the same time, it's not at all loving to withhold the truth from someone.
Exactly.
So you need both of them in there. You can start with the love, but you need to then have conversation to bring in helpful biblical truth that can help people.
Well, it's because Jesus, you see, was sent by the Father, full of grace and truth, through the love of the Father, not to leave us in our spiritual dysphoria, shall we say, but to convert us to the truth by his love.
Yes, that's right.
Yeah.
And when I take us back in the scriptures to the beginning of our shame about our bodies, that is what's needed. Adam and Eve, the beginning of their solution to their great shame is to turn back to God for his answer, for his provision. And he does give them provision in the beginning. And that's what all of us individually must do, is turn back to God for his answer, for his help.
All right, so some might say, well, the body is really not important. It's our soul, it's our spirit. The body isn't really important. It's just the carcass that we carry around for the spirit and the soul. What say you?
Well, I would say the Christian view is that the body is very much part of who we are. It's not like an accessory or an iPhone skin that you could just change. In a very real way, you are your body, and we can see that in the ways in which the body is honored in the Bible. It's only when God breathes his breath into the clay that he forms together that the man becomes a living soul in the beginning.
Well, and our bodies are also called the temple of the Holy Spirit.
Very much so. And it was a human body that Jesus Christ took on in his incarnation, which in order to prove to us how important we are as human bodies, by becoming one of us and taking on a man's body, he is affirming God's love for our bodies and the importance of our bodies for human identity.
So how much change to our bodies do we want to do or feel comfortable or biblically justifiable in doing if we're truly honoring our body? I mean, even in the Old Testament, there were strong admonitions against the Jewish people for markings on their bodies, for cuttings, and so on. Now, today, along with gender dysphoria, comes massive tattooing.
Yes. Well, there are certain things you can change help your body and to improve your body, like you could fix your teeth, you know, and you can exercise to be in good shape.
Mm-hmm.
But there are certain limitations that God puts on us that we cannot change.
How do we know what those limitations are? Speak to that.
Yeah. Well, if God tells us, you know, he has made us a man or a woman, we can't change that, no matter what the current technology, whether it be a drug or a surgery, whatever it's promising. You cannot have the stature you may want. You can't help keep yourself from getting old. You really can't change yourself and your gender.
All right, so we have to go from there after the break and have you tell us what we can do and what parents can do in order to deal with this subject with their kids. We'll be right back, friends. This is Viewpoint.
Have you ever considered what the early church was like? Many people are developing a heart longing for greater fulfillment in our practices as Christians. A recent study showed 53,000 people a week are leaving the back door of America's churches in frustration. What is going on? Why has there not been even a 1% gain among followers of Christ in the last 25 years? Could it be that God is seeking to restore first century Christianity for the 21st century? Jesus said, "I'll build my church." Is Christ by his Spirit stirring to prepare the church for the 21st century? The early church prayed together and broke bread from house to house. They were family, and it was said by all who observed, "Behold how they love one another." Incredible.
But the same can be found right now. Go to saveus.org and click Sell Church. We can revive first century Christianity for the 21st century.
It's about people, not programs. It's about a body, not a building.
That's saveus.org. Click Sell Church.
In today's world, this talk about transgenderism is a very delicate subject, particularly since our young people become so sold on the reality and truth of it because of the culture, because of their friends, because they want to be accepted. They don't want you to deny their identity, because then you're saying you don't love them. So how is a parent to respond in this situation? Well, the American medical establishment has, through a book called The Gender Affirmative Model, said, well, the real path of binding artificial hormone supplements and body dismemberment to help imitate features of the complementary gender is the way to go. New attempts, all they are is new attempts to be rid of the old shame with your body that don't work, and our fig leaves don't cover what needs to be covered. Well, these are words right from our guest book, Across the Kitchen Table, talking about trans with your teen. So all of these things are, what you're saying, actually a cover-up, like God making the first clothes for Adam and Eve because they saw themselves naked. They were naked. God provided clothing. He expects us to wear clothing and not run around naked as well. From the beginning, we see that. But when we try to create artificial cover-ups, like how about frontal lobotomies that became so popular in the 1940s and 1950s, burrowing into the brain through the skull in order to rectify situations that people were feeling. Well, that's not how real change occurs. So how does real change occur with one who claims to be transgender? How do we deal with that? How does a parent deal with that?
Yeah, well, I'm glad you bring that up in terms of the parents, because the relationship that you have with your teen, if the situation is involving a teen, is the biggest determiner of what's going to happen next in their lives. And it's great. I tell a story in the book about a father who had a daughter who started to go down this route. And he was very straight with her about the spiritual principles, that that God loved her body, that her body was something that was beautiful, and that she was becoming a woman, and gave her a vision for what womanhood is. And she came back. And she's married with a few kids today, and she says to her father, you know, I don't know what would have happened to me if you had not been in my life at that time.
Mm-mm-mm.
I don't know what would have happened to me.
So he was a loving anchor for her to work with her through the desperate feelings that she was having in order to get to the other side.
That's right.
To get to reality.
Right. Yes, and I kind of have two parts in the second part of the book where I kind of break it down. There's two things that, Chuck, we have to do to actually help people. The first is to help them be reconciled to their body, and to recognize that there's a reason for the feelings that they have for their body, and allow the spirit to go back with them and overcome those feelings.
Mm-hmm. So feelings do not override truth, do they? Feelings don't define truth. They're just feelings.
Right. That's right. They do not. But they can be pretty powerful.
Absolutely.
Debilitating.
No question.
So we do need to help people address them. And we can. We can, with some very powerful truths from the scriptures and from patience and from good counsel.
Mm-hmm. Which is what you do.
Yes. And the second part of it, and this is a real need for all of us, is to create a positive vision for our gender, is to recognize if you have a boy who feels like he wants to be a girl, you have to help that boy see that, you know, the cultural stereotypes are not what makes a man. The Bible helps us see what makes a man as we act in a manly way in relationship. And those creating that vision and making sure he understands he can do that, he can become a man, and it's a glorious thing, is the other half of it, the other part of the puzzle.
Exactly. While the culture is saying, you shouldn't be so manly, you should be more like a woman.
That's right.
That's what the culture is demanding. Yeah.
Yes, and there's a doubt in men that they can be men, that they really could be what they need to be, that they could take responsibility for others. You know, they could lead in mission, that they could secure their sisters or the women in their life. There's a doubt about that, and they need to be shown how that is. So, unfortunately, the breakdown of the family contributes to this problem because our young people don't have models that are attractive that they can look at and say, "Yeah, I want to become like that."
Exactly. I was just going to mention, after so many years, 20 years of dealing within the broader body of Christ in my law practice concerning issues of family law and so on, I see that this problem actually is lurking deeply in many, many marriages in the church. Deeply.
Uh-huh.
And so we have women, and God said that this was going to take place back in Genesis chapter 3. He said that the woman was going to try to lord it over her husband, and the husband, though, would become her ruler. And so it set up this ungodly war almost within the spirit for women to try to almost degenderize their husbands and keep them down. So we find men defaulting from spiritual leadership because they defer to their wives to do it. Wives say, well, I have to do that because my husband won't do it. So it's an unending battle that we see happening even in our own families, in our own marriages. And if we would just agree with God's viewpoint and begin to adjust our minds and our hearts accordingly, I think we would see a lot more wholeness, fullness, and joy in our relationships.
Yes, what's important in what you're saying is that this problem of trans is not some exotic problem out there. It's in here.
Mm-hmm.
It's in our own homes. It's all of us are in some way needing to grow in our genders and needing to affirm what God says is true and to become better as men, certainly, or as women. And so what should be our attitude is that this is not something weird out there, but this is something that all of us are growing in, and that's helpful to know.
Yeah. The book, Across the Kitchen Table, in other words, it's a conversation between parent and child, or between a counselor and one who's troubled in this regard. Talking about trans with your teen. $20 will put this very, very helpful book in your hands. It's on our website, saveus.org, saveus.org, or you can call us at 1-800-SAVE-USA, 1-800-SAVE-USA, or write to us at Save America Ministries, P.O. Box 70879, Richmond, Virginia, 23255, writing a check at $5 for postage and handling. Now, this is, right here on Viewpoint, we're confronting the deepest issues that trouble America's heart and home from God's eternal perspective. And we're doing that, yes, even today. You may say, well, I don't have any kid like that. I don't have a grandchild like that. Well, quite frankly, they're coming out of the woodwork all over the place. And Generation Z now is the most likely to be demonstrating this. What the parents have failed to deal with in their generation, the children are taking to excess. And that's what's happening. And whether you want to call it ungodliness, whether you want to call it confusion, God is not the author of confusion. God is not the author of confusion. He is not the author of transgenderism. He's not the author of homosexuality. even though many want to say that they were born that way. So let's deal with that, Sam, right at the end here. Are so-called those who claim to be transgenders born that way?
No, it's a condition that develops, and there's been a lot of attempts to try to find some kind of justification for it that really are not at all, it's not at all good science.
You mean like finding a trans gene?
Right. I have not found
or a homosexual gene? Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Neither is the case. No, we do much better if we recognize that there's something wrong here. There's a condition that needs to be addressed, and it can be addressed.
All right. Do you have a website?
Yes, it's called affirminggender.com. And don't be put off by the name. I had that name first.
Okay.
Because it's been up a while, but it's called affirminggender.com. And this book is there as well, and as well as weekly posts that help people discuss these issues.
So when you say affirminggender.com doesn't mean by implication that you're affirming what somebody claims to be their gender.
No, what I'm affirming is the reality of gender that God has created for us.
Two ways to look at the title, huh?
That's right.
Okay, so
that's
it's right. affirminggender.com.
Yes, and you can find help there.
All right, so how long have you been involved in this work?
Well, you know, as I said, I started pastoring in Greenwich Village in New York City in 2002. So it's been over 20 years, and I was there for about 12 years. I've pastored in different places in Pennsylvania as well, but this has always been an issue. I told God very early on that I was available to help and to walk with people who mm-hmm. might have difficulties in the area of gender. And so I've just made time for that over the years as a pastor. So I've been involved in it for a long time.
Well, I would think that pastoring in Greenwich Village, New York, is a tough call, like pastoring in Bradsbury there in San Francisco.
Well, I don't know if it's tougher than pastoring in other places. It was certainly exciting in certain ways because the issues were very clear, and the ministry was very much needed. But I love the area. It's got a lot of great things about it, and the people there are wonderful. So. It was good, and I think our church really made a difference there while we were there.
So you're not pastoring there any longer?
No, now I'm in Pennsylvania.
Oh, you're in Pennsylvania now. Okay. All right.
Yeah.
Well, Pennsylvania has the same problems, and in fact, Richmond, Virginia has the same problems where we're broadcasting from. This program airs all across the country, Sam, and... we'll be up on our website, saveus.org, this evening, where you'll be able to access it there on the website, saveus.org. It'll be up there for probably a year or so. So I appreciate so much your joining us here on the program today, Sam. It's a subject that we haven't really dealt with specifically here on the program, and I thought this is the opportunity for us to do it. You and I have had the across the kitchen table conversation here today, and I appreciate it so much. Again, friends, the book, Across the Kitchen Table, Talking About Trans with Your Teen. For many, it will be very, very helpful.
$20. Thanks so much, Chuck. Really enjoyed the conversation.
Thank you, Sam. $20 will put it in your hands. Don't delay. Do it today. Become a partner, friends. Don't wait for the other guy to do it. He's not doing it. Become a partner today. God bless and be a blessing.
You've been listening to Viewpoint with Chuck Crismier. Viewpoint is supported by the faithful gifts of our listeners. Let me urge you to become a partner with Chuck as a voice to the church declaring vision for the nation. Join us again next time on Viewpoint as we confront the issues of America's heart and home.